It's The Car Doctor with Kevin Raywinkle and Tom Claxton on FM Talk 106.5. Call Kevin and Tom now at 343-0106 with your car maintenance and repair questions. The doctor is in.
And welcome to the Car Doctor Show. This is Car Doctor Kevin Raywinkle, normally along with Tom Claxton, but he's getting better. We should see him in studio next week. But he's been on demand, so hey, it's all good. The show is brought to you tonight by UJ Chevrolet, Mobile's oldest GM dealer, Alabama Pipe and Supply, and Ed's Seafood Shed. It's kind of hard to go wrong with Ed's. Yeah,
fantabulous.
Fantabulous, as Tom would say. Always good food, no doubt, and doing good things for the community and our first responders for sure. But if y'all have any questions, give us a call, 343-0106, or send us a text to that same number, 343-0106. And with that being said, if you have any questions, give us a call. Keep me from having to talk the whole hour by myself. So
give us a call.
That's right. That's right. Give me a break here, but it's all good. We got a few things we can talk about, and try and get through the hour. But we've been pretty busy out at UJ trying to get all of our new inventory out on the front line and ready to go. Got a bunch of good looking stuff out there. Got our first Suburban in today too, the new body Suburban, bigger than the last one. So that's kind of hard to believe, but yeah, it is bigger than the last one. So more room, more stuff, more toys. So, good looking vehicle too. So,
yeah.
So if you're looking in the market for something to put, half a football team in and go go
soccer team,
go to the field or whatever, that that'd be a good vehicle to have. Speaking of which, on the way in, I was cruising down Michael Boulevard there and noticed that Davison High School had a game going on, and awesome. Over at Matthews Park they had a game going on over there. It's good to see some of our local high schools back out there, having some ball games and that, and getting the kids out and doing something. I'm sure they haven't been exactly at home the whole time, but they do need some structured activities to go do. Sports are really good. Gives you a good basis as you go through school. Gives you something to focus on and keep your keep you on the straight and narrow. Did a lot for me coming up through school, and I'm glad to see they're back out and playing. Hope we get to have a full season without any COVID problems, but that's to be seen. We just have to play it safe, not do like they did over in Fairhope here a couple weeks ago, and stuff a bunch of people in the stands and not distance and no mask and all that. Those people look like they were having a really good time. If they want to keep on having that really good time, they might want to dial it down just a little bit, be a little more careful about it. So they did a little bit better job over here at LAD. I was glad to see that and glad to hear it. I also want to take a second to, have a thought about the people that went through Hurricane Laura over in Louisiana. That's a tough thing to go through for sure. One thing that really bothered me was the fact that it looks like about half of the people that have died through that storm have been through carbon monoxide poisoning from generators. So we'll talk just a little bit about generator safety, what you should and should not do with them. Because, we're not even to the peak of hurricane season yet. We still got a couple months of dodging these things. Hopefully we can dodge them. But if not, we'll have our own shot at running generators and do our bit to try and keep our listeners safe through this. Because that's a really major deal. Through these storms like that, more people die most of the time in the aftermath of the storm than actually the storm does in most of these storms, because, you know, people, they get hurt working on their house or trees, you know, cutting trees and chainsaws and power lines that are down, generators, hooking generators up wrong, running generators where they're not supposed to be running them. It's definitely a problem. But, you know, first and foremost, if you have a generator, you need to get it out now. You know, get it out, change oil, crank it, run it, make sure everything works, make sure you have everything in place that you need to make it work and hook it up. Two, you should never hook your generator straight to your house unless you already have a dedicated generator disconnect switch on your house. Because you, one thing you don't want to do is send power back down the power lines from your generator to the electrical system in your neighborhood. Because somebody down the street or a power company employee, they're going to be out there moving power lines and reconnecting and working on stuff, and they're not going to be expecting that to be feeding back through those lines. So you need to make sure that you do not hook it up that way. Have extension cords in place to be able to hook up your fan, your refrigerator, small air conditioner if you got it, radio, TV, lights, whatever you need to run, but plug them directly into the generator, not plug the generator into the house and run it that way. And also, when you're running your generator, make sure it's in a well-ventilated area. It does not need to be in your garage. It does not need to be in your house in any way, shape, or form. It really needs to be outside in a well-ventilated area. I understand everybody's worried about someone coming up and stealing your generator. But, you know, there's chains and locks and that kind of stuff to keep that from happening. And you really got to be careful, even if you have a shed somewhere close to the house that you can put it in and run a cord up from, you don't want all the heat from that exhaust running inside that building, because you're liable to set something on fire that you don't intend to. So you got to be really careful. You know, I've seen people that put them in their garage and open the door a little bit. Really not sufficient. You know, you really, because the fumes will get into the house from the garage, you know, and you just don't know. You won't know it, and you won't know it till you wake up dead, because you'll go to sleep, and or if you're not tired, it'll make you tired. It'll make you sleepy. You'll go to sleep and just not wake up. So, very important safety, you know, and also as you're running your generator, if heaven forbid we have I've been through the couple weeks without power thing here in Mobile, and it's no fun.
No.
Every few days I would shut it down. You know, you're gonna have to shut it down to refuel it anyway, because you don't need to refuel it with it running. That's a good way to catch it on fire and everything around it. So shut it down. When you shut it down, check your oil, make sure the oil's good. But every few days I would go ahead and change oil. So you need to have a supply of oil and a filter if it's a big enough generator to have a filter. And you know, those little motors, they're tough, but they're, you know, you work them that long, that hard. I would change it, the oil, every 2 to 3 days. And it doesn't take that much oil. It's not that much money. But it's good insurance to do and keep everything up and working. But the key thing is just be smart about it. You know, don't have it where the fumes are going to get into the house or blow back towards the house. So just be very careful and also how you hook it up, because it could be very dangerous. You know, there's no sense in surviving a storm and then you know, killing yourself with a generator. But we're going to take a break and let you hear from our fine sponsors, and we'll be back after these messages.
A sack of clothes, free and easy down the road I go. Hanging memories on the highline poles, free and easy down the road I go. Free and easy down the road I go. Up.
It's The Car Doctor with Kevin Raywinkle and Tom Claxton on FM Talk 106.5. Call Kevin and Tom now at 343-0106 with your car maintenance and repair questions. The doctor is in.
And welcome back to The Car Doctor Show. This is Car Doctor Kevin Raywinkle, normally along with Tom Claxton, but he's out this week. Hopefully we'll have him back next week. Of course, I don't plan on being here next week because it's Labor Day on Monday night, and don't really plan on being here, to be honest with you. So it'll have to be a best-of show. Sorry, folks, but I'm going to take the night off. But anyway, they're, luckily Tom is on the mend and heading the right direction, and we'll have him back before we know it. And he'll be running his mouth just like he always has, so we'll be good. Yeah. But we were talking a little bit about after storm safety, and with the storm coming through last week, they had a bunch of water come through, some of those areas over there. So there's going to be some flooded vehicles on the market somewhere. We've already seen, haven't seen any flooded vehicles from it, but I have seen several. Several that were lightning strike vehicles, so those also have to be watched out for. But that can happen anytime. That's not just necessarily with a storm like this. But we got to watch out for. We really got to watch out for the flooded vehicles, and if you're going to buy a vehicle that happens to have been titled in that general vicinity, you need to be watching close. It can happen, and they're going to be on the market pretty quick because people are going to get them up, get them running, get them cleaned up, and get them gone before there's problems. So those are going to come quick. Yeah. They're going to do their best to get those going in a hurry because it doesn't take long to for it to be a real problem. You can get them cleaned up, and you can get them going, and as long as it didn't get inside the car, generally you're pretty good because most all the connectors and everything are pretty well sealed up outside. The ones inside aren't supposed to have water on them, so guess what? They're not sealed up. And once water gets in those connectors, they get to turning green. Once they get green, then they really get, they get nasty. Things start going south.
I saw a rental car like that once. The water was getting in there from the trunk, like the back light of the truck was falling in.
And that's even a different thing, but it's you can have water damage from even rainfall that gets in certain spots of the car. And and we have those from time to time, and we repair them, and they're okay because it's limited to a certain area of the car, and that area has been wet, where to go look at, what to fix, what to replace. You can do that. But if a whole car has been underwater, it's kind of hard to do the whole thing. And people can get in there and they can hide that stuff pretty well. So just be careful. But let's see. We got a message from Dave from Gulf Shores here. I think the Ford and Dodge quit the gasoline car business too soon. What do you say? Well, yeah, and unfortunately, GM's kind of on board with them. I was a little disappointed to see GM, drop a lot of our car lines. The Impala, I know it's not an exciting vehicle. It's not, it's not a Corvette. It's not a Camaro. But, it's been a really good car. It's a very comfortable car, and And I think over the last few years that they've been pretty attractive cars. But unfortunately, they've dropped it, and they've dropped a bunch of our cars. They've still got some of the small ones, but everything's gone towards SUV. It'll come back. You know, it comes and goes and comes and goes. Everybody wants an SUV. Everybody wants a two-door. Everybody wants a four-door. You know, everybody wants a sports car. You know, it's, you know, it we change our minds quite often. So, you know, so it'll all come back around, you know. Yeah. And they're just trying to, they're trying to supply what the market wants. I really think the electric vehicles are, you know, what's going to be the next biggest thing. They've been around for a while. I was talking to Philip about his mom's had a hybrid since what?
2004 or 5.
Yeah, the early 2000s. So they've been around, you know, 15, 16 years easily, you know. And they had I'm trying to remember the year that they did a early version of a semi-hybrid Chevrolet truck or GMC Chevrolet truck where it had a battery pack under the back seat, still had a gas burning engine, still had a regular transmission, did not have a starter I don't even think it had a generator on it, but it used the torque converter as a armature, and the bell housing had field coils made into it, and it used that to spin the motor when it was time to take off. There was enough voltage there in the main battery that it could operate the systems on the car, or the truck rather. You know, it was an early attempt, and it worked okay for what it was intended for. Didn't really do a lot for, you know, it boosted the power just a little bit. So, you know, it helped with fuel economy some, a little more power. All that was good, but really didn't do exactly what they were intended to do. They had the hybrid Tahoes that, as far as a hybrid goes, they were very good vehicles. They had, you know, it had a regular gas burner 6.0 motor, and it had a hybrid transmission in it that had two electric motors in it. A good battery pack. It had electric AC. It had a lot of good components on it. Did very well, and you could drive, if you drove it right, you could get fairly decent mileage around town out of it, and you could drive it quite a ways without ever turning the gas motor on. But there again, I think they missed the mark on what they were trying to do at that point with putting it in an SUV instead of a smaller car. You know, had they done something along the lines of the Volt, you know, or the hybrid Malibu like we have now, or hybrid Impala, you know, it would have been, I think it would have been better received at that point. So I just got a message here from the one of my sources here, but 08-09 Tahoes was the two-mode hybrid, and that was about the time I remember it. But the truck I was talking about was actually a little earlier than that. But the two-mode hybrid was it was actually a pretty good vehicle. The system worked well. It just didn't do exactly what what it was intended for. Kind of the strange benefit from that system was that it boosted towing capacity and horsepower rating. Yeah, because it could use the electric motors as well as the gas motor at the same time to boost power and boost towing capacity. So it kind of neat system, you know. It worked well, and they're still using a system similar to that in a lot of cars. A lot of high-end sports cars are using a very similar system to boost the output of the cars. There, they not only do they use the gas burner engine, but they use the electric motors to boost and get even more horsepower. So I believe for long we'll see something along those lines in the Corvette. You know, I don't know if we'll ever see an all electric Corvette, but I guess it's a possibility. To me, if you got a Corvette, it needs a gas burner. You know, it needs a motor in it that's going to make the Corvette sound. I did see a video the other day of the new, I think it's a 4.4 liter flat plane crankshaft overhead valve Corvette that's being tested, and it's a very high revving horsepower motor. It's turbocharged, twin turboed, makes really big power. So it has a unique sound, to say the least. Very, very neat setup. You know, there's some others. You know, I know the Cadillac has their trying to sing the Batwing motor or whatever they call it in their some of their cars. But it's a similar setup, but where they put the turbos and all in the valley between the heads, the Corvette's going to be a normal configuration with the turbos outside the motor. So makes for better aesthetics because you can have the pretty intake system and all this, because if you've seen pictures or seen the new Corvette, you can walk right up to it, look at the back of it. It has an open area. Say open, it's an area you can see through and see the motor that's in mid-engine. Kind of a neat setup, it really is. But they're coming, and I also saw where the new Corvette convertible is coming down the pike here before too long, probably on the 2022 model, but it's coming. So sounds like we've come up to our mid-break. I want to thank everybody for listening to the Car Doc Show, and we'll be back after these messages.
A little place called Hamburger Dan. I heard that old jukebox playing a song about a truck-driving man. So pour me another cup of coffee, for it is the best in the land. I'll put a quarter in the jukebox.
It's The Car Doctor with Kevin Raywinkle and Tom Claxton on FM Talk 106.5. Call Kevin and Tom now at 343-0106 with your car maintenance and repair questions. The doctor is in.
Well, I left Kentucky back in 49 and went to Detroit working on assembly line.
And welcome back to The Car Doctor Show. This is Car Doctor Kevin Raywinkle. If you have any questions, give us a call or send us a text, 343-0106. But, we were talking a little bit about the Corvettes and that the EV cars. The electric vehicle stuff, I think, is coming way sooner than what a lot of people think. You know, GM said a year or two ago that I think it was by 2027 they wanted to be the majority of their fleet be all electric. Very doable. Yeah, the technology's hit there already. It's just getting everybody on board to deciding that that's what they need to own is an all electric vehicle. Yeah, not going to say anything bad about them because they're good vehicles. They really have been fairly trouble free. Because of the technology they put into them that they needed to be for sure. But I don't know. I'm an old hot rodder. I like my car to sound like a car. Yeah. Don't need a soundtrack to to hear my car coming. You know, yeah. Now my days of having the really loud, obnoxious cars, I'm over that. But you know, I do like the sound of a good running car. I got behind a truck. I mean, I was like a half mile behind this truck, and I heard this thing through my very sealed up new late model car that's very quiet going down the road, and I'm listening to this thing. It's like good Lord, what is this? You know, and I get closer to it, and this got some huge tailpipes and straight pipes. It's like, my God, how do you stand driving that thing every day? But, you know, people do it. And looks like we do have a caller online. Let's go ahead and bring him on. Well, caller, are you with us?
I am.
What can we do for you?
I can get 350,000, 400,000 miles out of a gas-burning engine. What am I going to get out of this new electric car?
You won't have to buy 300,000 miles worth of gas.
Well, no, but I mean, am I going to get 300,000 miles out of it?
I don't see why not. You know, they're...
I know initially the big thing was you had to replace the battery packs, and they cost half the price of the car.
Well, you know, and most of those have like a 10-year warranty on the battery anyway. So the battery life is way longer, or the battery warranty is way longer than the warranty on the rest of the vehicle. You know, and yes, the batteries are expensive, and it's just like anything else electric, you know, or anything else. As the technology gets out there, the price is going to come down. Okay.
Right.
You know, they're, I don't see any reason why you can't get 200,000 to 300,000 miles out of an electric vehicle. I mean, I've seen, hybrids at least, that have had 200 plus on them without any real issues with the electrical system. Everything worked fine. We're just now getting into replacing some batteries on some of the earlier Volts and Tahoes. You know, we've replaced a few in the Tahoes, you know, there, but we're talking about an 08, 09 vehicle. You know, the thing is, okay, you know, 11, so 12 years old.
Yeah.
So, I mean, and it's just like anything else. If you maintain it, you keep the battery charged, you know, and use it like it should be used, it's going to last a lot longer, you know?
Yeah. I'm one of those changes the oil every 3,000 miles, even if it looks like I just changed it.
Right. Well, if you change it every 3,000, it should look like it.
What's going to be the trade-off? Are we going to, you know, need them more often or?
Yeah. You know, and, you know, honestly, we're guessing a little bit because some of this technology is still new and we're, you know, we haven't had them around for 15, 20 years yet to really know exactly what they're going to do. But I feel confident that that all that's going to be, you know, a non-issue, you know, down the road. Now, that being said, as far as, you know, the drivetrain of an electric vehicle, you know, 15, 20 years down the road, you're still going to need to take it to somebody that knows what they're doing with that before, you know, to get it worked on if there is a problem, because, you know, your average consumer really does not need to be under the hood of that hybrid vehicle with the voltages that's running around those things.
Mm-hmm. Right. It's going to be even less tinkering with on your own.
Right. And you know, and I hate seeing that as well, you know, because I come up in a time where, you know, heck, as a kid, that's how I got in this business, was, you know, just tinkering with vehicles. And, you know, as a kid, I was the dumb kid back then. If I had an electric vehicle, I probably would have never made it to be a dumb old man. So, you know.
Because I'm with you. I had a buddy, and we'd go out on a weekend and find us a car we could buy for $50 and put another $50 in it and parts and some sweat and turn around and sell the car and make a dollar or two, you know. But you can't do that with the things anymore.
Yeah, and that's really hard to do because, you know, it's so expensive to work on them and just the parts and stuff, you know. Like you said, you could work on, you know, you could buy a cheap vehicle, you know, and just little blood, sweat, and tears, and you could get it running well and make a little bit off of it or make a good daily driver out of it, you know.
Right.
And not have a fortune tied up into it, but yeah, those days are it's a little harder to do it now, you know, nowadays for sure.
What about self-drivers? Are we going to see that more with electric cars versus the gas, or do you think one has nothing to do with the other?
I think most of the self-driver stuff or the, a drone-type taxi, I guess, is the best way to describe it, where, you know, you call somebody for like an Uber or whatever, you know, and a driverless vehicle shows up, you get in, and it takes you hopefully where you asked it to. And yeah, I'm not making no promises on that part. I haven't figured that one out yet, but
yeah, the GPS gets me lost once in a while, so I'm kind of wondering how that's going to work too. But.
Yeah, I hope that works way better than that for sure. But yeah, it's I think most of those will be electric. I just think that would work much better, you know, and do a better job, because you know that's. It's kind of hard for, you know, I think a person in the seat of a car kind of monitoring what's happening with the vehicle is way more important when you have a gas burn engine and having to watch the temperature gauge and what's going on and all that kind of stuff. I know it can be done, you know, with a gas burner as well or diesel or whatever. But the electric, I think, would be much more user-friendly that way.
All right. Well, we'll keep looking for them then.
Yep. All right. I appreciate you calling in and listening to the show. We do have a...
Enjoy it.
All right. Thank you.
Take care.
All right. We do have another caller. And caller, are you with us?
Hello?
Yes. What can we do for you?
Hey, I've got a 2005 F-250 gas burner. Mm-hmm. It has no cruise control on it. And I was wondering if I would be able to put an aftermarket cruise control on it.
I'm sure you can. You said it's a 2005 diesel or gas burner? I'm sorry, I missed that.
Gas burner.
Gas burner. Yeah, I mean, it shouldn't be that big a deal, really. There are some companies, and I'm trying to remember. Honestly, you could probably go to some of the stereo shops in that around town. They can probably hook you up with something along those lines, because most of the stuff that's, you know, is there already to have a cruise control on the car. You know, you've got speed signals and all this kind of stuff. You know, it'd be easy enough to hook up, especially since the truck is probably already pre-wired for a cruise control system.
Okay.
Yeah.
Did the computer have to be reprogrammed?
Probably not. It's probably going to be more along lines of hooking into a brake switch signal, hooking into a vehicle speed signal coming out of the computer, and hook a cable up to the throttle body if it's a cable type system, or if it's a fly by wire system, even better, because it'll tie into the computer and have the computer, you know, control it from there. So so I don't see it being a real problem. Okay.
You think it'd be better if a shop did it, or you know, to not do it myself?
It's probably better for a shop to do, because you don't want to go poking and prodding around with the computer wiring, because you can cost yourself a lot of money if you happen to hit the wrong wire. And some of those, you got to be really, really patient and pay attention to where terminals go into those computers. And you may have to actually pull a wire out or repin a wire at the computer to do that. So I don't know if I'd recommend most people to do that have not been, you know, versed in doing it and the safety of it and all that kind of stuff. Yeah.
No.
Okay.
You may have already said this. What do you know? What shops around town would do that, or kind of stuff?
You know, I don't know as many as I used to, but I would probably check with some of the stereo shops.
Okay.
Yeah, that would probably be the first place. If they don't do it, they'll know who to send you to. Yeah.
All right. Well, I appreciate it.
Okay, I appreciate you listening.
But, yes, sir.
Let's see, we also have a text message here. Truck has 31-inch tall tires stock. I've upgraded to 35s. Is re-gearing necessary? What is actually being done when you re-gear a truck for larger wheels? Well, the re-gearing is you're actually replacing the I'm assuming it's four-wheel drive. You're replacing the front and rear ring and pinion in the front end, rear end, can be very pricey to do so. It wouldn't necessarily have to be done. If you got 35-inch tall tires on there, I would like to see at least a 342 gear in it. Some trucks, you know, a lot of them nowadays have at least that kind of gear in them. But with the 308 gear, I think it's going to make it way too lazy. It's going to make it to where it just doesn't want to take off. You're also going to notice your speedometer is going to be off a pretty good bit. So just have to see what you have and how it drives. If it drives okay, remember your speedometer is off. Check it against something so you know exactly where you're going speed-wise and drive it. You know, it should be fine. But if it's pretty lazy, you may have to re-gear. But I know we've got a caller online, but we're getting up to the end of this segment, and we'll get a caller to hold on, and we'll be back after these messages.
Eastbound and down, loaded up and trucking. Are we going to do what they say can't be done? We've got a long way to go and a short time to get there. I'm eastbound just like a bandit run.
It's the Car Doctor with Kevin Raywinkle and Tom Claxton on FM Talk 106.5. Call Kevin and Tom now at 343-0106 with your car maintenance and repair questions. The doctor is in.
And welcome back to the Car Doctor Show. This is Car Doctor Kevin Raywinkle. We do have a caller online. We have Billy with us, who has got a 89, I believe, Honda Accord. He's trying to get up and running again. 88, okay. Yeah. Said it's a carbureted motor in that one, right?
Carbureted, yes, sir.
Yeah. So it's spinning over and you can't get it to fire up?
Well, I can. I just haven't started it in a while. But I was wondering if there's anyone that still works on carbureted, because I know that once I get it to going, it's going to... One of the reasons it's sitting up is that was the problem, the carburetor.
Right. You know, there's not many people. I was talking to someone earlier about carburetors today, and it's kind of a lost art now, you know, trying to get someone that knows what a carburetor is first and then knows how to work on it once they figure out what it is. Yeah. But, you know, I would probably go to, you know, with that particular car, you know, it has a very unique carburetor on it. I would go to the guys that have worked on them for years, you know, like Rester's Honda out there off of Schillinger's. You know, one of the Honda shops that's been working on those cars for a long time would be your best bet, because I have worked on a few of them over the years and had some success with them, but they're a very unique carburetor. Some of them are what they call a three-barrel carburetor. Has two barrels and a very small one that does make a difference. It's got to work as well. So, you know, and those, one thing Honda was kind of known for in the carbureted days was the number of vacuum lines they had going to that thing. And they all needed to be there and they all needed to work. So I would definitely carry it to somebody that had been a little more versed on those carburetors versus your average, you know, independent repair shop.
What I was thinking about doing is buying a new carburetor, whatever they sell, a rebuilt carburetor.
Right.
Just have someone to put that on.
Yeah, and that's probably not a bad way to go with it. You do need to turn your radio down just a little bit because we got some feedback coming through.
I got you now.
But, yeah, they're, if you can find a good quality reman carburetor, yeah, I wouldn't have a problem with that whatsoever. And there's other options as well. I believe, you know, like M&D Foreign Auto Parts, you know, you can buy a Weber replacement carburetor that is kind of a universal carburetor that you know, they can get adapters to work on the car and make everything work. The little Weber carburetors work very well. So there's a couple different options. And at least with that little Weber, you know, most anybody that can work on a carburetor can figure that one out without it being a little little testy. Those the factory Honda carburetors are a little right. testy to work with for sure. Mm-hmm. Okay.
Okay. All right. Let me see if I can get it back on the road.
Yep. Yep. That's always good to get an old car back on the road. So see what you can do with it. Okay.
Okay. All right. Thank you very much.
Thank you. And it looks like we got another caller with us. See if we can get him on there. Caller, you with us? Hello.
Hey.
What can we do for you?
I've got a Harley Davidson and it's fly by wire, an 08.
Uh huh.
And it sticks. And so I'm just wondering, I can run 40 miles an hour and take my hand off the throttle and it will hold that speed.
Yeah.
And then I can manually go back to idle with it, but without using my cruise control. And so I'm just wondering, since it's so electronic, what do you have any idea what that might be?
Well, I mean, when you're saying you can manually go back to idle, I mean, are you returning
yeah,
the throttle
turn,
grip?
Yeah, I have to turn the throttle back to, down to zero, to idle.
Yeah. Well, that's going to have to be, if it's a fly-by-wire electronic throttle setup, it's pretty much going to have to be something in the throttle itself because there's really nothing there other than just some wires coming out of it.
Right.
So it's going to be in your handle grip, area. I'm not extremely versed with, with Harley setup, but it's...
I understand, but there's a little gear on the end of the wire unit that fits into a notch on the handlebar, and then your handlebar grip goes over that, and it has a female gear, if you would, that slips over the male gear on the wire.
Right.
And so I'm just wondering if it needs some lubricant or something of that nature, maybe. But since it's electronic, that's probably doesn't have anything to do with it, does it?
Well, I mean, if you can manually turn it back, that's a possibility. I mean, it wouldn't hurt to take it apart, clean it up, lubricate everything, and put it back together. Just to make sure everything is moving smoothly. Because if you can actually return it to idle with your hand, then it's probably something sticking on that.
I need some dielectric grease, which I have, and I can just maybe put it around where the little gear turns inside the electronic device there.
Yeah, and the dielectric grease would probably be a good choice for that. It's safe for all your electronics and everything, so it shouldn't be a problem there.
Yep. Okay, thank you so much.
Thank you for listening and calling in. But let's see, we do have another caller. Caller, are you with us?
Hello.
Hey, what can I do for you?
Can you hear me all right?
Yes, ma'am. Hear you fine.
Okay. I have a 2005 Volkswagen Passat wagon, diesel. Runs great, looks great. But the other day, I went to unlock my car, and I unlocked it, and the buttons flipped up, but the door wouldn't open. The driver's side door would not open. The door on the other side of the car, the passenger side, would open.
Right.
But the driver's side door has done this several times now. It will not open, even though the button is up.
Right.
Do they have to take the door apart to fix that, or is it in the locking mechanism? I have two keys, and they both did the same thing. Neither one would.
Right. Well, if it's flipping the...
But the door itself would not open.
Right. If it's actually flipping the lever to where it's supposed to be in the unlock position, manually reach over there with your hand and make sure it's all the way in the unlock. And if it still won't open, then it's going to be in the latch portion of the door latch. Which is, most of all those are the electrical part and the latch part's all made together. You probably have to replace that unit, that piece as a unit. That's usually what's, the first thing to go on those things is the latches themselves.
Well, 15 years old, I guess I really can't complain.
Yeah, you could. It's just not going to do any good, but, yeah.
Okay. Well, anyway, it's not a huge bill probably, and I'll, ultimately have to do it, but I wondered if it was a latch, and you said it is.
So. It probably is, and if you do manage to get it unlocked where it opens, do not lock the car back. Because it will cost you more, and they're liable to do some damage because, you know, if they can't get it to open, they generally have to pull the door panel off with the door closed, which is extremely difficult. They're not made to come off that way.
I have not been locking it.
Yeah.
And I took all my valuable papers out of it and carried them with me.
Right, right.
So, that's okay. I'm all right that way. All right. Well, thank you so much.
Well, thank you for listening. Thank you for calling in. And we also have a text message. James wants to know if it's okay to buy 87 octane from Shell. Yes. BP, Shell, Chevron, even though it's not marked, it is top-tier fuel. So you're good to go there. I just wanted to know, we're about to run out of time here, but I just did want to answer that for you. But, yeah, I want to thank everybody for listening to the Car Doc Show, and we will be taking off next week because of Labor Day. I deserve a day off. I'm good there. But want to thank our first responders and what they do for us, and hopefully we'll see Tom back in studio soon.
Yes.
But thank you very much for listening, and we'll be back week after next. Thank you.
Roll on, crew. Roll on, mama, like I asked you to do.